Recording in progress.
Wow. You don't sound like the hot woman saying it.
That's true. My apologies. There are a lot of motorcycles outside today, and also some jackass at the end of the street is shooting, so I'm sure you'll hear some of that.
That's incredible.
It's definitely something.
Why buy a comic that might cost more than a dime? Come meet the brothers who are here to waste your time.
Welcome back to the Dime Comic Bros podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Spencer, joined by Jacob.
Hello.
We are apart by distance, but not in soul yet again. This is the last week without Colin, so rest in peace to us having fun. The party pooper will come back, and we'll poop on our parties.
I mean, you say that, but he's gonna come back and just come in hot with any opinion that will get you in an argument of state. It doesn't really matter what he's talking about. He's going to press all of the buttons.
Oh, it's very true. I am the actual party pooper. I am just making fun of him because he poops a lot.
It's his poop that causes you to poop.
That's true. I'm an empathetic shitter.
Yes.
Yeah. So
is
kicking
it empathetic or sympathetic?
They're close enough where I feel like they'd both work.
Sympathetic shitter rolls out the tongue better.
I'm an empath. I can feel when the bros need to poop.
Oh, really? So what's your star sign?
Ghost Rider.
Ghost Rider shits?
That's a good question.
Thank you.
Oh, boy.
It's probably hot balls of coal.
I think that would make sense. Or it probably just incinerates on the inside, and it just it's reduced to atoms, so it just kind of like falls out of the pants.
So you're saying he's got a lot of bad gas?
I feel like I feel like the gas would probably not exist. Like it would be immediately ignited the nanosecond it gets generated. So he just has a combustion engine going on in his belly.
Dude, same. Anytime I have a beer.
The price we pay for having fun.
True story.
Is that a Popeye's cup?
Yep.
You
I
knew
went
it.
To the fine establishment for my dinner.
Damn. Got your chicky.
It was good too.
Nice. So kicking it off with the news. We do have a sad one to start off from comicbook.com. Dragon Ball creator Akira Toriyama is gone, but his work is still very much with us. In fact, 2024 was set to be another milestone year for Toriyama, as the next installment of Dragon Ball anime will begin with the release of Dragon Ball Daima. Toriyama wrote the original main story and did the character designs for said show, which will now see adult Goku revert back to his kid Goku form from the original Dragon Ball series, with the same transformation happening to Dragon Ball Z fighters like Piccolo, Android 18, Krillin, and others. Daima's trailers and promos have painted the picture of the series being one part nostalgic throwback to the original Dragon Ball series, while still retaining the updated aesthetic and animation of more recent releases like Dragon Ball Super Broly. When Akira Toriyama's death was officially announced, Sanda, a French animator who is now part of Dragon Ball Daima's creative team, posted this tribute to Toriyama. "This is the work that saved me many times when I felt like falling apart," Sanda said in a statement. "This is the work that made me fall in love with Japan. Without Toriyama-sensei, I don't think I would have become an animator. Thank you very much. May you rest in peace." So as a fairly vocal not fan of Dragon Ball, I still think this is incredibly sad, because without Dragon Ball, I don't think anime would be remotely as popular in the US or just like North America in general. The amount of like Dragon Ball influence on comics and animation is like, you can't overstate it. And this is just sad. Also, Toriyama was seemingly just like a pretty cool guy in general. He was just a goofball, so that sucks.
A lot of people have been talking about this within my circles, and apparently a lot of popular anime creators made really nice posts about how that's what got them into making anime, is they grew up on Dragon Ball. Like, some of the big names of anime today were kids when Dragon Ball started, and that like made them really enjoy anime. So from Variety.com, Netflix has renewed Avatar: The Last Airbender for two more seasons. The series, a live-action adaptation of the hit Nickelodeon series of the same name will end with season 3, following the same structure as the animated version. Avatar is set in a world divided into four nations, the Water Tribes, the Earth Kingdom, the Fire Nation, and the Air Nomads, that once lived in harmony with the Avatar, master of all four elements, keeping peace between them. But everything changed when the Fire Nation attacked and wiped out the Air Nomads, the first step taken by the Firebenders towards conquering the world. With the current incarnation of the Avatar yet to emerge, the world has lost hope until Aang, the young airbender, reawakens to take his rightful place. Alongside new friends Sokka and Katara, siblings and members of the Southern Water Tribe, Aang embarks on a quest to save the world and fight back against Fire Lord Ozai, though Prince Zuko is determined to capture him.
So I have yet to fully finish this. I was pretty optimistic when it was in discussions. I, as every time this comes up, am very skeptical of live action anime. I don't think it's a good idea.
Especially when it's made by Netflix.
Yes. But to the contrary of that point, the most recent release, I do not believe these two studios have anything in common, but was released by Netflix was One Piece. And One Piece was pretty solid. I have watched one episode so far of Avatar. It's getting a mixed to slightly positive reception, which is better than a lot of live action animes get. I'm just glad that they're finishing. It gives them the opportunity to improve rather than just canceling something right after it crashes and burns like Netflix tends to do. So it's cool that they're going to finish it out. It's been seemingly popular enough that they can make money on it. So it's positive, just not very exciting. I don't have a formed opinion on the show yet. So
I have not seen a single second of Avatar.
You really should get on that. It's fucking awesome. And I'm pretty confident you would love it. From Variety.com, Bo DeMeo, the showrunner and executive producer behind Disney Plus's upcoming animated series, X-Men 97, has been fired ahead of the March 20th premiere, Variety has confirmed. DeMeo had completed work on seasons 1 and 2 of X-Men 97 ahead of his exit. He will not attend the March 13th Hollywood premiere for the show. His Instagram account, which on which he had been previewing artwork and answering fan questions about the show, had also been deleted. He wrote and produced X-Men 97, which is a continuation of the popular X-Men the Animated Series that aired on Fox Kids starting in 97. It is unclear why DeMeo was fired from the show so close to the premiere, but he will no longer promote the show or be involved with future seasons. They really need to get better at vetting people if they're going to keep canning creatives. Everything's just the rumor mill. I was really digging to try to find anything substantial about this, and the only like rumors that seemed vaguely not crap were that he's just kind of like a skeeve, which is bad.
I knew it. I was going to say, my theory is that he was diddling Kitty Pryde.
I don't think it was that bad, but I think it was. It sounded like he's just, in general, there's people kind of already knew that he's just kind of an asshole to work with, and he's kind of, let's say, sexually obnoxious.
Incredible.
So it's unsubstantiated if that's why. That's just the only thing I could really find. I mean, I guess it's good that he was able to complete work on season 2. The show looks really good. As we've gotten more footage coming out, I'm not going to be able to catch this exactly when it comes out, but I'm going to really try to cram in the animated series and finish that before, like, as soon as I can, because this show does look to be very good. So,
from HollywoodReporter.com, The Batman Part 2 is now moved to October 2nd, 2026. That's back a full year from its previous date. This is no surprise. The writers and actors strikes pushed this without a doubt.
Yes. I'm not mad.
No.
I can't believe it was 2 years ago when this came out, though. That is insane. As it delayed things are usually better. So it's good that they're not rushing it. But yeah, I think we had talked about this off air pretty recently that we've heard so little beyond we know the script was done and like none of the actors had received anything yet. And it was probably going to get pushed. So I'm glad that they made an official announcement instead of just kind of going about it really quietly and then just announcing it like, I don't know, over the summer. And it's like, haha, JK, it'll be another year and a half. So
I was thinking about it today. Do we have any news on when the Pengi Wengi comes out?
Not that I'm aware of, no. I know it's this year, but I think that's the last information we got.
Yeah, it should be soon, I would think.
They were mostly done with filming when the strikes happened, and then they went back to wrap up afterwards. And then I know it was originally supposed to be last year, and then they had officially pushed it to this year. Then they released that trailer. So I'm going to guess fall to maybe Christmas.
Oof. Okay.
Definitely this year, though. I don't think they'd push it again.
I'm excited for this next one.
From DC.com, in the DC universe, Zatanna is known for her backwards-speaking spellcasting, but what good is a backwards spell that's locked away in your darkest memories? DC and magic fans will find out this June as Eisner Award-winning writer Mariko Tamaki from Detective Comics, Harley Quinn Breaking Glass, and Crushin' Lobo, and artist Javier Rodriguez from Batman, The Brave and the Bold, The Dreaming, Waking Hours, and Tales of the Titans, take Zatanna on an all-new adventure in Sin City as Zatanna Bring Down the House arrives at participating comic book shops and e-tailers Tuesday, June 25th. In this DC Black Label series, 17+, for adults only, get out, kiddos, there's boobies. Zatara is the greatest entertainer in the worst hotel and casino off the Las Vegas Strip. The ritzier hotels would love to have her as a headliner, but since a devastating instance of magic gone wrong changed the course of her childhood, Zatanna would much rather rock her trademark top hat and fishnets as a sleight-of-hand stage actor than bother with real magic. I couldn't be more thrilled to be working with this team and have the opportunity to tell a story that spotlights Zatanna, said Tamaki. We're very excited for people to see this weird little story we've whipped up for their reading pleasure. Hype. Oh my gosh, I'm gonna die.
Wow, you left the obligatory holy shit, a DC Black Label book that isn't Batman statement to me.
You stole my quote, but yes.
But I kind of low-key like Zatanna anyway, not just because she's hot, but also really like the idea of backwards speaking spells, and like I've always wondered if she has to memorize it or if it comes naturally to her. Like, how does that magic work? I don't know. And reading more books about it is cool.
Yes. But yes, also Black Label book, that's not Batman. Massive W. Good creative team. There was a story. Of course, it was a Batman story. It was a Batman and Zatanna story from, I believe it was Batman Urban Legends, like last year or the year before. That was pretty nice. It was about them, because they're friends slash maybe were more than friends a while ago and whatever. Zatanna's father was where Batman learned magic and then decided, I'm not going to do magic. That's cringe. So they have like a long-standing relationship, and they kind of explored it in that story, and I thought that was pretty cool. So I don't have a lot of comic familiarity with her, but every time she shows up in an adaptation, I get excited. So this is cool.
I've wondered before too, like, how would you do a Zatanna in a movie or TV show? And Colin's going to say this is cringe, but I think as she's casting her spell, like if you had magical words like writing in front of her as she was doing like Stephen Strange hand signals, so that you, the viewer, can read the word backwards and be like, oh, that's just something like, it would have to be something visual so that you understand what's going on.
Yeah, that would be cool. There's a character, one of Crazy Jane's alters in Doom Patrol has a power where she can speak magic words and then the words become reality. And they kind of do that. So she'll say like knife, and then the word knife will appear and then it turns into a knife. So there's definitely like a precedent for that.
But so yeah, that'd be cool. Like, one of the DLCs to Alan Wake when you shine the flashlight at the word.
Kinda, a little bit. Oh, you got a sneak a little cheeky Alan Wake in there.
From DC.com, on June 4th, DC is bringing the action and excitement of the hit animated series My Adventures with Superman to comic book fans in a new series, written by series producer Josie Campbell and drawn by artist Pablo M. Collar. My Adventures with Superman picks up from the explosive end of season one, serving as a bridge to the highly anticipated season two. That's how numbers work. Being the producer of My Adventures and bringing Clark Kent to TV screens around the world has been nothing but a dream come true for me, said Campbell. So I'm absolutely thrilled that Pablo and I get to bring fans even more adventures with Superman, this time in comic book form. Clark Kent is a bit down and out, spending Christmas alone in Metropolis. But when he gets a tip about a monster in the sewers, Superman, Lois Lane, and Jimmy Olsen spring into action to investigate this mystery. What is this monster that can absorb anything it touches, and why is it here in Metropolis? This story is one we actually talked about in the writer's room, but we didn't have space for it in season one. Damn it, I was gonna call that. continued Campbell. So get ready for romance, comedy, superpowers, Jimmy Olsen talking a lot about how he's super rich now, and all the goodness of the show bundled into this action-packed miniseries. Artist Pablo Coller brings an impressive DC pedigree to the series, having provided art for DC's Are You Afraid of Darkseid, DC's Ghouls Just Want to Have Fun, and other DC anthology titles. I was completely in love with My Adventures with Superman the minute I saw the announcement of the series, and I jumped at the chance to work with Josie on the comic, said Coller. Superman has always been the reference and the symbol of all that's goodness, and being part of something like this is a dream come true, and the whole team will give it our best. My Adventures with Superman number one is available for pre-order at participating comic book shops Friday, March 15th, and arrives at participating shops Tuesday, June 4th. I knew it was a cut episode because it's coming out in June and it's a Christmas episode.
Yeah, I had a feeling. I do like that, though. Like, it does. It's a weird phenomenon. This happened with a lot of Star Wars stuff after the Clone Wars got canceled, which ended up being some of the best, like, Disney Star Wars books and comics that they've released were just axed Clone Wars scripts. It's always kind of sad when you don't get to do everything you want to, but it's nice, and also it helps kill time between seasons, which I'm sure is good to keep it in the cultural zeitgeist.
I'm going to get the next one just to throw the order off because I don't want a certain one. According to a Twitter post from Witches writer Scott Snyder, he recently finished the first draft of the finale of Witches Season 1, which is coming to Amazon in 2025. He will be taking a few months off before starting on Season 2. This is very exciting.
I agree.
I hope that Fallout is at least decent or mediocre, so that I can watch that when I re-up my Amazon Prime to watch this.
That's fair. I think we talked about it when it was announced that they were going to be doing more than one season. I'm very curious if they're going, like, what's the process here? Is Scott Snyder just readapting the book that he wrote? Is he stretching it out? Is he making it like an anthology series? Like, what is he doing? I don't, because my gut feeling says that there isn't enough material in that one comic for more than one season. So I'm very curious.
I bet it's going to be the main premise with a lot of Christmas lights and tinsel thrown on it.
That'd be cool. I'm just really happy that he's still involved with it. Like, he's the writer for the show. That's always fun. I used to get a little bit more butthurt with this writer or whatever is revisiting their old property to make the adaptation. Like, A Series of Unfortunate Events, the writer of that was very heavily involved in the Netflix show, and it basically was just retconning stuff in the books that he thought was dumb. But I liked that. One, the show was great. And two, I don't know. I used to get butthurt by that, and I've come around on it. From an artistic standpoint, it seems validating, and it is always cool to just be involved with stuff like as it goes on. I don't know. I just remember I used to get so mad about it. I was like, get somebody new. And now it's like, meh, just don't let them George Lucas it. I don't care.
Right.
From comicbook.com, following news of 8 billion genies heading to Amazon, the franchise already has some big names attached. It was revealed that Seth Rogen and his Point Grey Pictures are producing the project for Amazon MGM Studios. According to Hollywood insider Jeff Snyder, Rodney Rothman, the award-winning co-director of Into the Spider-Verse, has been hired to adapt the comic into a screenplay. The series was first optioned by Amazon back in 2022. At the time, it was revealed the company not only intended to turn it into a movie, but create a franchise that spans fans, television shows as well. In the comic itself, created by Charles Soule and Ryan Brown, every person on the face of the planet one day gets one wish. Though there are some caveats to the wishes they may cast, the story soon takes a post-apocalyptic turn as battling factions aim to scoop up everybody else's wishes. Tonally, it's partially inspired by The Walking Dead, although it includes genre-bending fantasy and sci-fi concepts. I have still yet to read this, but every single time I hear about it, I'm like, I really need to put this at the top of my list. But also, Seth Rogen's company has put out some pretty good stuff. They were very heavily involved in Mutant Mayhem, and that was a bop. So,
mm-hmm.
We ball.
Yeah, I don't know anything about this either.
I swear, Seth Rogen's one of those guys that it's just like every day my respect for him gets bigger. It's so weird. I used to hate him. Now I love him.
Yep.
What's going on?
I don't know, man. From comicbook.com. Skybound's Universal Monsters line is continuing to grow. The publisher has unveiled a new Frankenstein series, offering an updated take on one of the most popular monster movies ever released. Written and drawn by Michael Walsh, the series will follow suit with Skybound's Dracula and Creature from the Black Lagoon comics in that it will be 4 issues long. The story of Dr. Frankenstein and his poor, misunderstood monster is one of the most recognizable and influential horror tales ever told. It's also one of my favorites, Walsh said in a press release announcing the book's arrival. The original 1931 film from Universal Pictures is a continuing inspiration for my art and storytelling, so as you can imagine, I was honored to be able to play in that sandbox. According to a synopsis provided by Skybound, the story will follow Dr. Henry Frankenstein as he robs the grave of a police officer, only to run into the officer's son, still grieving over his dead father. Trying to tell an original story while staying true to the canon of that film was an exciting yet daunting prospect, Walsh added. It's been some of the most fun I've had making comic books, and I know that fans of Frankenstein and horror will have a blast experiencing these characters and iconic scenes like never before. I put Creature from the Black Lagoon on my pull list as soon as I found out Ram V is on it. And the artist, too. I forget who. Wait, I don't know. The creative team for that one just sold me immediately, despite never having seen anything from Black Lagoon. I'm very excited.
This is cool. It is interesting how they're all kind of taking different approaches, whereas Dracula is primarily adapting the book.
I think
I agree with you. Again, I haven't looked at it. That's just context clues. But this is simultaneously kind of adapting the film, but also not. I think that's mm-hmm. cool that Skybound is giving them like the flexibility to do that. And also just having differing teams working on it. And also Walsh doing the story and art is always fun. Walsh's art is fantastic. I don't think I've read anything by him, but especially the cover that they released for the first issue is great. It may be slim pickings for new DC movies in 2024, but there's a big one on the horizon. James Gunn's Superman is slated to release in 2025, and it's going to usher in a brand new cinematic DC universe. To celebrate the start of filming, Gunn released a photo of actor David Corenswet's Superman costume. It may not seem like much, but this lone close-up costume tease actually reveals a surprising amount of the influences behind influences behind and direction of Gunn's Superman. This article breaks down what we can glean from this image and why the movie seemed to be drawing from one of the most iconic DC storylines of all time, moderate amounts of clickbait, etc., etc. The design of the S emblem is a clear sign that Gunn is drawing inspiration from Kingdom Come for his take on Superman, which was designed by Alex Ross, Daddy. It's not to say it's going to be a direct adaptation, blah, 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 blah. But the Kingdom Come influence does speak to one of the larger themes of the new Superman movie. This movie will focus a great deal on the philosophical divide between Supes and his fellow heroes. As producer Peter Safran put it, he's kindness in a world that thinks that kindness is old-fashioned. Just as in Kingdom Come, this version of Superman will stand as a testament to a nobler, gentler way of doing business in a world of increasing violence and conflict. The S may look different, but it still definitely represents hope. I actually committed and shitted in my pants when this happened. It's gorgeous.
I'm surprised.
Yeah, I know. It's gorgeous. It's perfect. I love it. It's basically Kingdom Come, but color swapped with the color palette from like the Fleischer cartoons, as well as having a yellow outline around the S. The texture is really nice, but it's not overdone. It's all the same texture. And also the photo confirmed that snow does exist in this movie. And then like a week later, Gunn confirmed that they had just shot at the Fortress of Solitude. And then like 2 days ago, he confirmed the entire movie is being shot in IMAX. So every day I get more excited for this.
Wow.
Come.
So in 2027, when it finally comes out.
Oh, we're having a party.
That'll be season 7 of this show.
Hold on.
Right?
What year is it? 2025. Calm down. 25. This year is 24. We started in 2020, so we'll be on season 5. Thank you very much.
That's incredible.
That's how numbers work.
Damn. From comicbook.com, Alan Moore has been saying, "Fuck you guys, I'm sick of hearing everybody's opinions, and I'm gonna stop making comic books that actually say fuck you, and you still make heroes out of them." Now it seems we know his final project. I put a lot of my own
flair.
Worldview into that. Yes, flair.
He is emerging from his cave for one final time. And he will collectively put yet another spell on us.
Recently, Top Shelf Productions and Knockabout Limited announced the publication date of the long-awaited comics/prose album The Moon and Serpent Bumper Book of Magic, the product of the years-long creative partnership between Moore, who's done a lot of things, and his creative and magical mentor, that's in quotes, Steve Moore, no relation. Top Shelf characterizes the book as, quote, a celebration of magic and the occult, has been meticulously under development for nearly 2 decades and is brought to life through a combination of prose, illustration, and sequential art from 5 incredible artists, end quote. It will be on sale in October of 2024. Here's how the publisher describes the book. The Secrets of the Celebrated Moon and Serpent Grand Egyptian Theater of Marvels, Sorcery by Appointment since circa 150 AD, promised to be revealed in The Moon and Serpent Bumper Book of Magic. This clear and practical grimoire of the occult pairs the knowledge of the proprietors of the aforementioned Grand Egyptian Theater with illuminating visual delights from artists Kevin O'Neill, John Coulthart, Steve Parkhouse, Rick Veitch, and Ben Wiki. Unprecedented in its scope and splendor, this tome is full to bursting with illustrated instructional essays, activity pages, biographies, and the great sorcerers, and forbidden knowledge sure to tantalize even the most disillusioned of adults into believing in magic once again.
This sounds fucking awesome.
It sounds wacky and weird.
You know those books you could get at the bookstore as a kid where it would be like Book of Fairies and Book of Pirates? It's like that, but fucking cool and done by the most crackhead man to ever live.
I cannot wait to find a middle finger at all the comic book nerds, calling them comic book nerds.
I agree. This is really cool. I left it out of the article, but this is also the same publishers recently put out, I believe it's called Maya Hawkmore, from sort of friend of the show, Davey Baker. It's a similar like prose and comic book, and that's been getting a really good reception. So this is just neat. I also like that I don't know any of these artists. It'll be nice to expand my horizons because I will probably pre-order this. From IndieWire.com. It's not anger, it's love. Such is the ethos of The Crow, and the most remarkable line in the first trailer for Rupert Sanders' long-gestating remake of the 1994 cult drama of the same name. This time around, it's Bill Skarsgård bringing the iconic love-ridden baddie back to life, literally, of course. The breakout It star leads the new reimagining of the graphic novel that was famously brought to the big screen in 1994. In that version, Bruce Lee's son, Brandon Lee, played the lead role of Eric Draven, a man who comes back from the dead to take revenge on the man who murdered him and his fiancée. Lee was killed on set tragically during the final days of production when a prop gun fired. The Crow has been set for various remakes over the past 3 decades with Mark Wahlberg, Jason Momoa, Bradley Cooper, James McAvoy, Tom Hiddleston, and Skarsgård's own brother, Alexander, all previously attached to different iterations. With Sanders at the helm, Skarsgård is set to play Rockstar Draven, who is killed alongside his beloved Shelley, played by FKA Twigs, and her evil ex, Danny Hudson, only to come back with a vengeance. Before any opinions are stated, I need to do a journalism thing. Every single fucking outlet has been describing this as a remake, and it is bothering me so much. This is like describing Batman Begins as a remake of Batman 89. It's a new adaptation of the original source material. Fucking die. Like, this is horrible reporting. It is clearly very heavily inspired by, they talk about the movie. It's the reason why this is even like a known property. The comic book was extremely underground at the time, but still, this is just dishonest and shit, and I don't like it. On the other flip side, I am very cautiously optimistic about this. I think it looks really good, and I think almost everyone's criticisms are stupid.
I have one input. We know Bill Skarsgård is safe because Alec Baldwin isn't in the movie.
Jeez. It's true.
I haven't seen the original movie yet. I know I need to get on it. And,
Wait, you had that week off. Colin and I watched it. I forgot about that.
So I still have yet to see it ever in my life. But the trailer does look pretty good. So, wow.
Yay. I had another point and I forgot. They also released some old set, like test footage or photos from when the most previous iteration, which was originally going to be Jason Momoa, which was another casting I was actually kind of on board for. And those photos look cool. It's not really related. They just, somebody leaked a couple of pics. It looks a lot closer to the one portrayed by Lee, but I don't know. It's just a note that I was like, oh, that's nice. You know, it's always cool getting to see like old stuff that didn't happen. I hate how much this is dividing our friend group, because there are a lot of opinions on this, and it makes me mad because I feel like everyone's just kind of mad for no reason because their criticisms don't make any fucking sense. I have criticisms. I'm not like, this is the best trailer I've ever seen. That's the teaser trailer for the Batman. Obviously, that was the best trailer ever made and probably ever will be made. But this looks pretty good, and it's got a talented cast behind it. The visual style is on point, and I thought the trailer was pretty good. So I don't think releasing this in the summer is a good idea, that's for sure. But
yep.
I, you know, we'll see how it goes.
I don't know. That's the end of the news, though.
Moving on to another Spirit of Vengeance, I read Spirits of Vengeance Spirit Rider, number one. It is a one-shot. This was published around the same time as the Doctor Strange and the Sorcerer's Supreme 12-issue series that I talked about a while back, which I wasn't a huge fan of, but it had a lot of cool characters in it, and Spirit Rider was one of them. This was her own little pseudo-origin issue, except it's not actually an origin. It is written by Taboo and B. Earl, with pencils by Paul Davidson and Jeffrey Farage. This is cool. This was a good issue. I'm very annoyed that this character seems to keep getting put by the wayside ever since her debut. Basically, she is from the 1600s. Kushala is a Native American Sorcerer Supreme and sort of Ghost Rider, but not really. It's a very long, convoluted reason as to why she's not actually a Ghost Rider. Basically, she rides your spirit. That's not a joke. That's why she's called the Spirit Rider. Yes, take all the inference from that you will. That's exactly what Johnny Blaze did in this comic. He was like, damn, that's hot. And she's like, shut up and die. So she can kind of go into your brain and like do stuff. It's weird. And that's what a lot of this was about. Something was like haunting Johnny Blaze, and he's like, ah, help. I need help from somebody else. And then she's like, I got you, bitch. And then they go into his brain and they go on an adventure. It was pretty good. I think I gave it a 4 out of 5. It hits that spot right where it's probably more like a 7 out of 10 for me in reality. 3 out of 5 seems rude, and 4 out of 10 seems a little bit over dramatic, but it's the best thing I can do. It's short. It's one issue. It is a one shot. It's only like 44 pages, so it's like a normal issue size. But it was cool to get to know the character a little bit better, and I just really, really, really fucking hope that she actually comes up in something else again, because this was just cool. The art was fantastic. She has a very distinct visual style, apart from the other Ghost Riders. The whole she doesn't have a motorcycle thing is kind of relevant. She has a horse, because horses. I don't know. It's cool.
She's a horse girl?
She is indeed a horse girl. I don't know. It's cool. She just has a different vibe than the rest of them. I think she's right next to Robbie Reyes in terms of like well-rounded character introduction, and is cool and looks good. And it's a shame that they seemingly have just forgotten about them. Robbie Reyes got a bit more attention for the next few years. He was in the Jason Aaron Avengers run, if I remember correctly, for a while, but he seemingly disappeared yet again, which is annoying because currently the current run of Ghost Rider that we've been talking about, we've been edging for quite a while. The relaunch by Benjamin Percy, whereas the Spirit of Vengeance gets into the hands of a bad person, is a great premise. I already have the first issue. We're ready to roll. But when they were doing this big tease of like, oh, it's going to be the new Ghost Rider, it's like, we've literally had multiple new ones and they're all good. Could you stop? So I wanted to go back. I also found this for $1. So that was cool. It was in the bins at Jetpack. I was just flipping through and I was like, oh shit, I didn't know this existed. Hell yeah. And then I read it and it was a bop.
Nice.
E. What about you?
I watched True Detective season 4.
Oh, here we go. actually, sorry, it's True Detective Night Country. You need to use the correct name. It's not season 4.
I'm channeling Colin's peaceful spirit right now, and he's telling me to tell you to eat my ass.
He has reached out from beyond.
True Detective season 4 is set in Alaska. It opens with a bunch of dudes in a research facility and weird shit happens. And as it's looking around, it's got the thing, the movie The Thing, on the shelf, and then proceeds to do the thing. It really sets the tone for the show. It's trying to be typical True Detective head up ass, but this season really isn't. It's not subtle at all. I don't know what went wrong with this season. There's good ideas that I like, but it just feels raw. There's a meme that some YouTubers use of Gordon Ramsay going, "It's fucking raw!" And that's how I feel with this season. It's not even underbaked. It's raw. I don't think Jodie Foster is bad at acting, but I really hated her acting in this season. I think she was directed poorly. That's what I'm just gonna guess. There's so much dialogue where it feels like, now go to your desk and be a cranky bitch. Like, ugh. A lot of it's like cringe.
That sucks, because the first two seasons, which are the only ones I've seen, are very not cringe. They have like incredibly subtle and well-rounded performances and directing.
Season 3 as well. And then I don't know where this came from. It also stars Callie Reese, who was a wrestler or fighter in real life, like won big time fights and whatever. And she did really well at acting. I really enjoyed her performance.
Are you aware that the showrunner for this season is going to be returning for the next one?
Yes. I'm pretty sure you said the next two.
I might have. I'm only aware of the just 5, but
okay. I thought you had said 2.
Maybe. I'm known to be stupid.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, there's a lot of good ideas, but there were also just like complete dead ends. A dude is waiting a couple days for something to happen, and he goes to greet this event and it doesn't happen, and he's like, ah, and then drinks. And then that's it. Like,
that sounds like you. That sounds like you trying to go on dates and then getting stood up.
That hasn't happened yet. Yet.
That's probably a good thing.
But it just didn't go anywhere, and especially when it just didn't belong in a season that's already raw. I don't understand what the point of it was. Yeah, I went from the best season of True Detective to the worst. Maybe, you know, next year when you finally caught yourself up, we can talk spoilers during happy hour.
We'll get there.
I want to talk about it with someone. I'm going crazy trying to figure it out.
Just go on Reddit. I believe in you.
Ew. Talk to dirty, sweaty Redditors. Other dirty, sweaty Redditors?
There you go.
Listen, I told you I couldn't make this phone call until I jumped into the shower, so I'm not that bad.
True. I have indeed seen you apply deodorant before, so.
Your turn.
My turn. I read The Hood, the saga of Parker Robbins, which is a collection of three stories, the first of which is The Hood, issues 1-6, which was written by Brian K. Vaughan with pencils by Kyle Hotz. That was released during the Marvel Max era. I will explain it shortly. It includes material, so not the whole thing, from Dark Reign, The Cabal, which, if you're unaware, The Cabal is a supervillain team that was around during when Norman Osborn was like, but what if we made the Avengers, but bad? And then Dark Reign, The Hood, 1-5, which is another miniseries written by Jeff Parker with pencils by Kyle Hotz, which is awesome. Basically, the initial premise of this one is a Max book. So it's edgy as fuck, boy. It's basically the Spider-Man parallels are all over this thing. Initially, the back cover of this book literally says, with great power comes great opportunity. And it's so fucking obvious in the best ways, in the first series, at least. This is what if a low-level shithead, not a total dirtbag, but also kind of a shithead. So a goon, which has different context these days, but, you know, a goon, one of those Riddler goons, you know, from Lego Batman, just a guy, just a normal guy who's like, I'm not a total shithead, but also I'm kind of a shithead. You know, he doesn't like children type bad, but he's also like definitely cheating on his wife and also will kill people. So he like sort of has a code of ethics, but not really. So just some low level scumbag gets a hold of some magical objects. It is a cloak and boots, because you gotta have shoes, man. Which in the long term you find out are part of Dormammu. That part's confusing and weird. Basically, he just kills like a demon, is the real explanation you're given in the first series. He kills a demon, steals his shit, and then the boots can make him fly. And if he holds his breath, the cloak makes him turn invisible. It's goofy as fuck, and I fucking love it. It's amazing. I love this book. I love Brian K. Vaughan because he's a great like crime thriller writer. And the first miniseries was really, really well done. It's Marvel Max, and it's from like 2004 or something like that. Sorry, 2002 or 3. So a lot of language, which sometimes we use, but probably wouldn't be appropriate to start spitting out in public. I'll probably leave it there. There's some ableism and stuff in there. And it's also trying to be edgy, so it's like cranking that up to level 15. But also it's, to be fair, pretty realistic sounding dialogue. It also has some early post 9/11 stuff going on there in New York. They make references to 9/11 and shit. You know how it is. You've read a comic from between 2002 and 2005. You know.
I've read a lot of Max comics, and it sounds like you got a good one.
This is definitely really good. I think you'd enjoy it as well.
You bastard.
He's just a really well well-written character. Like, he has very odd personality traits, but they all blend together pretty well. It's not a super deep book, but it's beyond surface level. It does actually try to interrogate some ideas about, like, crime and recidivism and stuff like that, but not super seriously. It is still a superhero comic book that references Spider-Man and 9/11 and stuff, so, you know. But also there's a lot of butts, because it's a Max book from 2002 or 3. So there's a lot of butts, which is cool. The pencils are really cool. I did not initially love the art the first few pages, but once you get in the right, like, flow state of reading, it works really well. I also really like the fact that Kyle Hotz was brought back for the second series, and so far this is all of the material for this character. He's appeared in other books, but not this is the only stuff that he's, you know, the lead for.
I love the, it's a Marvel Max comic, so it talks about 9/11 and stuff.
It's true. So basically, by the end of the first story, he's all, I'm gonna be the big bad guy. Yeah, let's go. I got powers and shit, and I don't have to worry about nothing. And then the next story is an excerpt from Dark Reign, which was, again, a couple years later during a period of time when I believe Brian Michael Bendis was writing The Avengers. And then they were all, but what if there was a bad Avengers and they make the Avengers look badder? Ooh. Which is actually pretty cool. So Dark Reign was just a very bizarre time period. But basically, the implication is during this time period, between the two stories, the Hood has just made a gang, basically. Like, he's just turned into the Godfather, which they reference multiple times in this story, the next story. And everyone who ever talks about this story is pretty much only talking about, like, it's like the Godfather, which is true. It is. So he's in charge. He's balancing having his wife and young child and also being a shithead and being in charge of this massive crime organization, but, like, not telling her or anything. It's like Breaking Bad. It's really cool. That little excerpt is just, like, over a funeral, basically, that he's doing the procession for. So it's just, like, a big speech. But it's really cool, and the art was fantastic. And then Dark Reign, the Hood, follows up on both of those plot lines. It's a little complicated. There's a lot of stuff going on, which was a little muddy in terms of, like, gang war and affiliations and stuff. But it's a pretty damn good sequel to the original story as well. It actually follows up on the basically teaser ending of an arch nemesis and stuff, as well as, like, this guy is just a dude. Like, you can punch him in the balls, you know? He's just a guy with a cloak and boots. But also, he's really good at performing. Like, not necessarily inaccurately, but he's a very good manipulator. And not in, like, a very over-the-top, like, sociopathic way, but just, bro's got riz, you know? He can just make a bunch of supervillains be his bitches because he can. He's really good at doing theatrics because he's got a cloak. It's cool. Live with it. And then balancing that with his family life is pretty cool. I was reading this in preparation for the current Ghost Rider run, which I mentioned earlier, because this guy apparently gets the Spirit of Vengeance, and that's the new plot, which I'm excited for now that I'm a bit more familiar with this character. He also popped up in the most recent Ghost Rider annual issue, I believe, or it might have been, like, the Halloween special, to set up that new run. And he was cool there. I didn't love that issue, but he was pretty neat. So he basically hasn't been seen since, like, 2010 or something. Like, he's one of those characters that was really popular for, like, a day and then went MIA. I bought this for $35, which is reasonable. I think if you buy both of the two stories in that are actually in it, the little bit in the middle barely counts, it would probably be like $40 to get those two trades. I think they're both out of print right now, which doesn't help. So they started reprinting this book as a collection because, wow, would you look at that, he's gonna be in an upcoming series. I got suckered into it. I can't blame myself because it was cool and good. He's a guy with boots and a cloak and a couple of Glocks, and he's badass as shit, but also he's fucking evil. It's so goofy, but in a very Marvel way. Like, it's hard to describe, but this guy existing in the Marvel universe just makes shit tons of sense. So I definitely enjoy it. I recommend it. I think you'd like it. You're also fairly familiar with Brian K. Vaughan, and you just like crime stuff, and you don't love head-up ass stuff. And this is not head-up ass. I love head-up ass, but this is just it's well done, goofy, self-serious shit. The comedy half of it is just them making jokes, and the other half is like, this is fucking absurd. This guy with his little fairy boots and his cloak just shoved a gun in the Green Goblin's face. What the fuck is going on? And that's pretty cool.
This sounds great.
It's goofy and edgy, and I think in a way that actually makes it enjoyable. It doesn't seem to just be edge for edge. You know, all edge, no point. This is not that. Doth thou have anything else, sire?
Yes.
Yeah.
I need a question.
Fuck! Poo-poo in my bum-bum.
I warned you as soon as I could this morning. Because I rolled out of bed and went, oh, shit. Today's Saturday? That came quick.
It's not the only thing. So what currently existing Marvel character would you like to get the Spirit of Vengeance? Or a Spirit of Vengeance? Not just so we can make a Funko Pop of Venomized Hulk for like one issue. If you had to pick a character to just become a Ghost Rider for like at least a couple of years, who would it be? And then explain it to me in detail. If you say the Hood, I will reach through the screen and punch you in the balls.
Joke's on you. I don't have any balls.
That's true. The Hood.
I'm kidding.
Natalie Portman took them.
I don't feel like going through an entire list, so I'm just going to go with the first thing that entered my pea brain. And we have already talked publicly and privately about Daredevil getting the Spirit of Vengeance and what that would look like and if it would be good or bad, and I'm still undecided. Branching off of that, it would be cool if Elektra got the Spirit of Vengeance.
I was just thinking that.
Because, one, she's hot. So she needs the hellfire in her. But also, she's ethically gray at the very least. She's an assassin. She's not a good guy. Good girl. Wait.
I don't think she wants you to say that to her.
So, to have the Spirit of Vengeance and that dichotomy, that dualism, would be really, really interesting. That would make more sense, I think, than Daredevil. Because you could actually have a character arc with it instead of just the struggle of my Catholicism and hell demon. So, yeah.
I agree with that. Cool. I think that would be interesting.
Even if you did like the Elektra that became the Daredevil gets the Ghost Rider, do the triple dunk.
She got that dog in her.
I really like that Daredevil outfit that she got.
It's so good. I love that they're keeping that as status quo right now. Yeah. I'm very happy that they didn't decide to retcon that with the current run. They're just rolling with it.
Let's see, who else? Gonna make me sound like a perv. It's two in a row. The Black Widow would be fun. Cause she got that red hair.
Ooh, but what if they did the hair and it was fire like the Phoenix? Ooh woo.
What?
Jacob, stop, you're making me horny.
I'm trying to think of a dude.
That's not gonna help.
Cyclops. Give him some personality. It's called the Spirit of Vengeance.
I mean, that would kind of be like when he got the Phoenix Force.
You're right.
Not that that's a bad thing. But I'm just saying that there's overlap.
Did that really explore his character, or did it just make him an asshole?
I think it did both. Speaking of, I forgot to include it in the news because I couldn't find a decent way to present it, but we got the announcement of the new X-Men books and their creative teams, and they all look really good. There's like three main titles and a bunch of like character spinoffs, and all of the creative teams look fantastic.
I saw that too. It does look really good.
Yeah. The
it was a cool poster too, because it was like the three titles side by side by side as like connecting covers basically.
Yeah, and you get the full team lineup and all their new outfits. And I think that was done by Stegman. And Stegman's doing the art on, I think it's Uncanny, one of the three main books. And then they had like a little side bit that's like, and these eight characters are getting their own side titles. And that was pretty cool. Yeah, I think it's I think it's Jerry or Gary Duggan, Al Ewing, and somebody else who I really respect, but I can't remember their name, are like the big three writers. So that's cool.
Very good.
But I just forgot to include it. You made me think of Cyclops because he's getting a new outfit and they made him young again, which is interesting, I guess.
Is he still a cuck?
That's a good question.
Thank you.
That's the end of the show. If you want to become a cuck and subscribe to our Patreon and give us money and we'll just tell you that we like you but lie, you can go to patreon.com/dimecomicbrosnetwork. We have a bunch of different tiers with cool rewards, including but not limited to bookmarks, stickers, lots of stickers, early access to all of our podcasts, exclusive access to happy hour segments, which are exactly what it sounds like. We have a drink, we talk about random shit after every episode, or most of them. It could vary in topic from more comic book stuff to like politics sometimes, God forbid. It's anything and everything.
I think you mean we have another drink.
Shut up. Another drink for me, actually. As well as some really cool art commissions done by Colin, our third, the third leg of this well-hung man that we are, collectively, the Trinity, as you will, who does art, and he's a good boy.
He is the third leg between you and me, the legs.
Yes, it's very true. We hold him up, but he makes us look more impressive when he's actually around.
We don't like it when he's down.
It's true. We don't. And that would make our two patrons, Jeff and Caitlin, the balls. And I think that that fits.
When Colin's down, it ends up with one of us getting pissed on.
Ooh, also true. And we'll say your name. That's another thing. We'll say your name on the show a lot. We'll say like Jeff Lorenz, you know, all seductive like and stuff. Give us money. Be a cuck. That actually used to be one of the tiers a few years ago. It was like cuck, simp, and like boyfriend, and then like I think it was some stupid like long distance no commitment booty call or something retarded. Give us money.
It's a good thing we reworked those.
Yeah. Also, something that's free, but we would appreciate you doing anyways, is subscribing to our free Substack weekly newsletter. You can go to substack.com. Wait, no, dimecomicbros.substack.com. It's also linked in the description of the podcast and all the other stuff. Jacob, most of the time, puts together a little recap / read along / watch along with the show with a bunch of art references and stuff and things. It's very cool.
I forgot to tell you that I shitted out last night, like you asked.
I read it. I actually think it turned out very well.
Thank you. I didn't have the Patreon and Jetpack pictures downloaded to this computer, but that was it.
It worked. It was good. If I ever get my shit together, I'll go back to doing those for our other podcast, Dime Gaming Bros, like I was doing, and then for Gore.
Whoa.
To be fair, that podcast is usually twice as long, and it's hard. Like me.
I usually type it up while I'm editing the episode because it gives me something to do that isn't Halo multiplayer.
I try, but also some of the edits require a lot of editing, so I have to focus the whole time, and that's hard when you're down, when it's like a 2-hour podcast, which means at least 4 hours of editing. It's a while, you know. If it's an easy one, I might just play whole multiplayer and then I'll like pause the edit, wait for the match to end, and then I'll do the edit. But DGB can be pretty all over the place, so you know, sometimes it requires focus and it's hard. Like Colin, third leg. Also, speaking of Colin, no, not your leg, Jacob. Don't show me your leg. Put that away. Colin has been on a hiatus for the past like 6 months, and like we said at the top of the show, he will be returning next week. Finally, he will never leave us again, and we will be whole. that's what I tell myself. But while he was on hiatus, he was actually working on stuff. The Space Adventure Part 1, Clutching Godhood, is out now at Jetpack Comics and Games in downtown Rochester, New Hampshire, as well as on his Patreon. All of that is linked. It's very good. We are very proud of Colin for finishing something for once. And also, it's great. And our name is in the book, which is neat. Go buy it and give him money. He also needs money. And speaking of Jetpack Comics and games, there are long-term, no-commitment booty call. They support us, and we attempt to support them in any way that we can, which means we basically just shop there all the time. I was there yesterday. You should shop local. It's good for the economy, and it's good for you, and it's good for the stores. If you have a local comic shop, make sure to shop local as best you can, especially with this industry. It's really important. And Jetpack Comics and Games is our local shop, and they're great. I was in the back rooms, not those back rooms, the other back rooms, flipping through singles yesterday, and I picked up some more fun stuff. So, blah, 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 blah.